This is Canadian Wealth Wisdom by Tridel to Private Wealth. My name is Kyle Taylor, Wealth Advisor and Portfolio Manager with Tridel to Private Wealth. I am joined by Cameron Windsor, Head of Equities and Portfolio Manager of TriDelta's Growth and Pension Equity Funds. Cam has spent over a decade with TriDelta, but previously worked with Franklin Templeton, RBC, and Scotiabank in a career spanning almost 30 years. Welcome, Cam.
Thanks, Kyle.
Before we begin, it should be noted that this podcast is intended for general information only and not as specific investment advice. You should always speak to an investment professional to determine the appropriateness of any investment or investment strategy and how it relates to your specific situation. That said, the TriDelta team welcomes a conversation to learn more. The purpose of this series will be to discuss recent market developments, what we're watching, and ultimately, what action TriDelta is taking within our growth and pension equity strategies. Of note, CAM strategies, the growth and pension funds, have returned 17.25% and 16.36% respectively. Interestingly, the pension fund has outperformed the growth fund over the prior 6 months, ending September 30th. CAM, before we go any further, maybe you can take us through what the two equity strategies are and how they're managed.
Sure. So pension, the mandate for pension is to look for some great dividend paying stocks with the opportunity for capital appreciation and also being aware of also capital preservation, as this fund has done particularly well, especially in down markets. When looking for names to include in pension, we look at more than just dividend yield. We focus on valuation, cash flow, dividend growth, return on equity, and we also try to find companies that have some kind of a fundamental catalyst to help move the price of the stock higher. The growth fund, it kind of goes with what its name is, except this fund's a little bit different than some of your normal growth funds in that we adapt our style depending on the market environment. So we have these quantitative models which track different styles, whether it's, you know, growth, value, momentum, dividend, all those. And essentially, we, depending on the market environment, depends on how we tailor the fund.
Interesting. Going a little deeper into 2024, the equity markets have generally been quite strong. The TSX is up 14.5% year to date, and the S&P 500 is up 20.8%. U.S. dominance has continued to be the trend, some call it the norm, but we finally got some rotation from the 2023 Magnificent Seven and artificial intelligence leaders. Can you speak to what you have been seeing and what other sectors have been benefiting?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, one thing, let's just kind of jump back when we're talking about index comparisons. So one thing is you have to know that indices are very different from each other. The S&P 500 is dominated by technology. 32% of the index is in infotech, and about another 20% is made up of the consumer discretionary and communications sector. And those are both fairly heavy also in technology. As you're looking at Amazon and Tesla are the two biggest stocks in the consumer discretionary. And then when you look at the communications sector, Meta, Google, and Netflix are the three biggest names there. So, when you look at the TSX as a comparison, 60% is made up of financials, energy, and materials. So financials is by far the largest at around 32%, and the rest is made up of the more cyclical types of names that you would be seeing in the energy and materials sector. So when you're looking at some of the, at the top level TSX versus S&P, or looking at European indices, things like that, that's one thing you need to keep in mind. And if you're looking to be ever making bets between those, making sure that you kind of have those top sectors right is essentially going to determine your call. As far as kind of what we've been seeing, over the last 10 months, we've been talking a lot about valuations and earnings internally. You know, these are normally what drive stock performance. It was known to us for a while there was a lot of just ridiculously cheap looking stocks out there. And essentially, they finally played catch up, whether the catalyst was, you know, the declining of interest rates or some other things. But essentially, these stocks finally started to play catch up.
We spoke earlier this year about the widening gap between growth and value stocks, and you alluded to it there. Do you think we're seeing this trend reverse, or will growth continue to support the major indices?
Yeah. I mean, in general, stocks that grow earnings are always going to be rewarded. And, you know, as long as they're fairly priced. We have run into times that you've pointed out in the past, and in particular, like, say, a Cisco example, where, you know, things can get ahead of themselves. And essentially, you know, people get into problems when they think that those oversized gains can last for a much longer period. So essentially with growth investing, you know, people can get into trouble when they think that when they don't see the earnings slowing down or that normalization of growth is occurring. Growth seems to be synonymous these days with technology stocks. And that seems very fair since they are by far the earnings growth leaders. It makes total sense. But one thing we need to make sure that we're looking at going forward as well is that other sectors can become growth sectors. Utilities, for one, they've had a nice run. Part of it is in interest rates starting to move down, and these are sometimes a lot more levered. But, you know, people are finally coming to the conclusion and realization that we need a lot more electricity in the world, whether it's to power your EV cars or whether it's to power the data centers running all this AI stuff. So essentially, that's one thing that we try to do here is we try to look at where the growth is going to occur and is happening when looking at the, you know, estimate revisions and stocks moving up in that front. So, I mean, kind of to go back and answer your question, like, growth will always support the market. I just don't know if the growth is necessarily going to come from the ones where it has. I think that, again, you are seeing earnings deceleration, which in a lot of these tech names that were growing 100% earnings a couple of years ago are, you know, now gone from 100 down to 50, down to 30, and are maybe going to be growing 15. And if they're doing that, they can't have the same multiples. And a lot of the multiples have dropped. Again, something like even NVIDIA. Like, NVIDIA obviously is on a real tear, but its growth has been getting cut down quite a bit, and the valuation has been correcting for it. So there's a lot of different moving parts to that, is what I think. But again, in essence, you know, as far as are the technology stocks going to continue to lead us, you could see a point where this AI push has come a little bit too far, and the markets need a little bit of a pause, a little bit of a reset, and wait for something else to drive earnings going forward.
And one of the big stories this year, of course, has been around, one of the many big stories has been around interest rates. Now in Q3, I believe, you know, Canada saw a lot of benefit because real estate, financials, utilities, materials, those were sectors that did quite well. Was a lot of that attributed to falling interest rates, or were, you know, people finally picking up attention to names that have been lagging?
Yeah, I think, you know, you had a couple things. One, you'd have the interest rates being dropped, which then a lot of these more levered companies, more debt-laden companies, so people are going, okay, finally, we've kind of seen the end of the rate rise, and we know that they should be fine and able to essentially pay all their you know, debt costs. The other thing too is that people who were potentially stashed out in cash and getting their, you know, in some cases 5% on money market funds kind of saw the writing, you know, on the wall that this really wasn't going to last forever. And so here's your chance to go and potentially pick up some utility stocks, which are yielding, you know, the 5-6%, and you have some capital appreciation potential on it. So those would have been some of the drivers that I would have seen.
Something really interesting when I was you know, going through some of our points for the commentary when we're writing it, was the fact that, you know, this time last year when rates were still quite high, we were talking a lot about how people were not wanting to own those dividend pairs, not wanting to own equities because you could get better yields through bonds or through cash, and that risk premium really wasn't there for equities. But what I found interesting is that today is that the cash balances that people are holding on the sidelines still quite high, even though yields have fallen quite a lot. Do you think that's just the uncertainty that people are kind of feeling? Because it's been a strong year. You can't say that the markets haven't done well.
Yep, no, exactly. Anybody who's been heavily, heavily in cash and thinking, oh, I'm pretty happy with my, 5% and see, dividend yielding stocks, up 20%+, it's can kind of sting a little bit, but yourself with the clients, some people have their own individual goals. They've got their targeted return amounts. And as long as they're getting that and they can sleep well at night, that's pretty good. So there's definitely some cash that I would think is, would be making its way into the market, but there's a lot of people who are thinking 4% still not too bad.
Yeah, especially after so many years of getting, 1 or 2%, of course. But
exactly.
Certainly you think there's a missed opportunity when, things obviously continue to chug along and you're sitting on the sidelines. But Anyways, one of the sectors that we talked about that's been covered a lot in financial media and elsewhere is around the materials sector. Because of gold and silver and other metals that have continued to reach new highs. Do you view this as a trade as a hedge against uncertainty, inflation concerns, or is there another driver there?
Yeah, gold's a tricky one to talk about. You can always find somebody who any situation is going to be good for gold. It's inflationary, buy gold. Deflationary, buy gold. The markets are great. You've got more money. There's a great India wedding season and everyone's prosperous. So buy gold. And, so there's always a reason for it. I was taking a look at this recently and, kind of given the data that at least I'm looking at this time around in this recent move, you can kind of eliminate inflation. I was looking at CPI for the US, which I think is a fair gauge for inflation. That started moving up in June 2020 and peaked in June of 2022. So essentially we'll say, roughly inflation peaked in the middle of 2022. And during that time period, gold was unchanged. Maybe up or down 1% or 2%, but nothing major. It wasn't until March of 2024 when gold started really making its move and broke through 2,000 and then basically has trucked it to what we're almost sitting at 2,800 now. So, given that, I would think that, again, it's kind of a fear. It's an uncertainty. You've got the war issues. You've had government debt, which has kind of come a lot more to the forefront. So that, I think, might be kind of the bigger one. And then obviously we've got the elections coming up, and there have been numerous elections across the globe that have been put into the mix. So it's not just US centric here.
And I read recently that through a Bank of America report that gold actually became the second largest reserve asset held by central banks globally. And I think a lot of that had to do with countries like China that have been buying up a lot of gold, and that certainly put a sport on the price. But the other thing I was told recently was that the dates you lined up there align pretty well with when Costco started to sell gold bars at their at their warehouse. So while on the topic of gold, Newmont is a heavy weighting in many Canadian gold ETFs, and they saw a pretty sharp decline recently. Have gold companies not been benefiting the same as the gold price itself? And if so, do you have any feedback on that?
Yeah, so I think, the difference, when you're dealing with stocks, there's a lot more inputs to it versus just a single thing for the commodity, more or less. But there's a lot of investor expectations, perhaps, I think, embedded into the stock. So I took a look at this, and so, Newmont was up about 100% from March 2024 to mid-October 2024. During the same period, gold was up about 35%. So it definitely had its good run and it caught up, but I wonder if people were just maybe a little bit more. It also coincides, there was a decent drop that was with an earnings report, and Newmont had some company specific issues where production was lighter than expected, debt came in 10% higher, and there's thoughts that, you know, earnings are going to start drifting lower. And also, again, people might be starting to discount the whole, maybe we can't hold this 2700-2800 level for that much longer. Maybe there does need to be some give back in that. And maybe they got a little bit ahead of themselves. So those would be a couple of the things I would look at there.
Okay. I mean, speaking of uncertainty as, you know, using gold as a hedge, there is a U.S. election taking place in November that some people may not have heard about. What is the market predicting?
So the general consensus that I keep hearing is that it's a Trump win and there's the possibility of a GOP sweep across all the branches of government. And I don't know, to me, it just seems way too close to call, and there can be so many things that are still going to influence this. And so I think, again, it's just we're going to have to wait until
until the dust settles.
Yeah, but, and that could take a while.
And we know that even if you can correctly predict who wins the election, the market response can be something else entirely. And I mean, something we shared in our Q3 commentary was 2016, when people thought if Trump won, the markets would surely fall off a cliff. In fact, I think the night he won, after market or before market hours, markets were showing about a 10% decline. And then we know what happened. The markets went on a tear. It got that positive momentum. And it leads to an interesting point that sometimes just having someone elected removes that element of uncertainty, because all of a sudden you know or have a better idea of at least what you're going to get from that administration. But interestingly, investors tend to view a split government the most favorably, because it means that nothing's going to get done.
To me, the biggest thing is the government spending, and that someone just needs to get a control over that. And right now I'm not seeing anybody who's putting their hand up in the air and saying, look, we really need to cut our spending here. But I mean, like, as far as there's some trades that we've been doing which had some fundamental basis, which I think also then could lead into some election trades. Like, so we've been lightening up on energy in the funds. We've been reducing the weights, and that's mostly due to fundamentals. But if Trump were to win, as again, people seem to think that he's at least the favorite right now, I could see energy coming under more pressure, because again, one of his big things that he's talking about is expanding drilling operations and making it easier for companies to drill. And I think already we're in a situation where we've got a little bit of excess supply. Demand is weakening, both, you know, both in the U.S., I think, and when you're looking at overseas. So if that comes in, that's just going to put more supply into a market that doesn't really need it, and that could push some pressures down. Other trades I've heard, which we're not delving into, is the whole Bitcoin, crypto type of space. And, you know, it seems to have been built, you know, as it seems more likely that Trump is potentially going to be elected, that Bitcoin seems to be running, which is maybe a coincidence. And the other Trump trade, which would actually kind of fall in line with stuff that we kind of already have in place, is that particularly, say, the industrial sector, that would promote more onshoring of companies if Trump actually is able to go through and, you know, take the pen and create more tariffs and limit the input of goods and make, you know, locally made U.S. goods more attractive. I could see something like that happening or helping out companies like we have, like, say, Sealed Air, which goes to a lot of industrial bases, or ADP, which, you know, payroll, if the, you know, employment were to continue to tick up and stable and become even stronger, then, you know, you've got a number of things there that would benefit.
Yeah, it certainly seems that regardless of where people fall on the political spectrum or the investment spectrum, they're likely to be some volatility and uncertainty in, you know, leading up to and potentially just after the election. Yeah, I certainly think that's also an opportunity for the long-term investor, of course, right? So what, you've already alluded to it a little bit, have there been any major shifts in the funds the past 3 months?
Yeah, as I said, we already kind of mentioned the energy shift. We've also started reducing financials, especially Canadian banks. Valuations, and those are some of the most stretched we've seen in years. We've also been selectively reducing some of our relatively big winners. Say in the pension fund, we've had IBM, which has been a really big winner, and say Celestica, and the growth fund, which are up a lot for us. As far as names that I'm adding to, though, there's no really broad theme that I can think of. You know, essentially what we're looking to do is buy stocks at a good valuation with good growth potential. You know, say one in pension fund that we have is Rogers Sugar. You know, it's a name that we've been adding to. Company focuses on, you know, sugar and maple syrup. You know, it's trading around 10 times earnings, which is at the low end of its historical range. It has a yield of 6.4%. Earnings are supposed to grow more than 40% this year. And estimate revisions keep going higher, which means, again, you might be able to get a little bit more earnings out of that. And the company has some expansion projects on the go, which should expand capacity and profitability. So, you know, that's one of our pension names. On the growth side, I mean, one name that, you know, it's our largest holding in our fund, but it's Bombardier. And, you know, we're up, I think, close to 130% in this. And I've done a little bit of trimming on it just because of this, you know, it's just become an oversized position. But, I mean, the stock's trading at around 16 times earning, which is very fair, especially when it's a company whose earnings are supposed to be up 50% next year. Again, we talked about earning estimates. That's one thing that we like looking for kind of as a forward gauge of you know, the possibility of growth increasing or decreasing. And those continue to be pushed higher. They have some positive fundamental things going on where they're getting more into the aftermarket service. So their earnings is tilted more towards that, which is a higher margin, more stable type of earnings. So, you know, we've got some good opportunities here.
Good to hear. I mean, you mentioned forward looking. It's been a good year for the market so far. Do you think we'll see this momentum continue into the end of the year in 2025?
I hope so, but it's all earnings dependent. And we're coming into a period now where, you know, we're with the third quarter earnings. And, you know, as long as companies can continue to perform, the market should do well. But I think, you know, again, given what we've talked about before, valuation is still at the higher end of things. And, you know, you're getting a number of companies now that are coming in and meeting estimates, and they're getting a bit of a sell-off here. So, I mean, we don't see anything cataclysmic by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it's just makes sense that the markets should be just taking at least a little bit of a pause in here. You know, the markets have had a healthy run and returns have been less concentrated around the Magnificent Seven. Lots of other companies have caught up. So I think it just kind of makes sense that the markets could take a little bit of a breath here.
Absolutely. So thanks again for joining me, Cam. Any listeners who have not already read our Q3 2024 market commentary, I would encourage you to visit the Insights page on our website. That concludes this recording of Canadian Wealth Wisdom, and more specifically, our quarterly market update series. Thank you.